can maybe piss off me. I explained you before, I am a psychologist and I'm writing now. One day a week, I write for DBR.
That's all.
Leave it out.
That's okay, we can always.
One day a week, I write for DBR, Bureau of Vocational Education Test. And this is my great thinking. I'm going through a lot of different kind of people in testing. I see, when I watch these people, their life, what they went through, is because their parents did the wrong thing. They are not, everything is to blame the parents. Children are taken from the parents, as you said before, they learn to see the parents. Teaching isn't enough. If you have a good teacher, and you come home and you see your father does exactly what the mother does not want the teacher taught you to do. So you like better to do what your father does, especially if it's something that's not good, something that is dirty or something. That is, we have inside our new information that we think we do the wrong thing. This is... I don't know why I'm mixing in different kind of things, but I think that I personally think if you will ask me, if somebody will come to me, nobody is coming to me to ask me if advise us if they should go to a dance, if they should go to a ball play, or if they should go to something else, nobody is asking me. I'm not here in this world to tell people, to teach people what to do, everybody is concerned, especially in the United States. But my opinion, sometimes I'm looking at these people, their pleasures, what they are looking for, that they are a little bit crazy. That's my opinion. Maybe I'm crazy, but I look, I cannot understand why they're so involved, whole life. It wouldn't be better if they were studying, they were learning, they were getting in that system. Some more knowledge, some more reading, some more... The time that they're spending for nonsense, for really, it's a waste of time. It never comes back. And you know already, I'm born in 1995, I told you. So I'm not a youngster anymore. And I went through a lot of things, and I look at people that they're wasting their time. Ron Solar, you know, the 73 years that I'm old, ran over so fast and I regret I could accomplish so many things and I didn't. I wasted time with it. But also, I think it is something that I'm always stupid.
Maybe we can fill in the gap with the education, or do you want to still do more?
Well, I thought maybe when you were back in Poland now. You were, 18 years old when you returned to Poland. Would you like to continue from there?
Okay, then we came back to Poland. I continued my studies. And I got my ordination when I got 22 years old. And I married with my wife in Poland. She's also from Poland.
Were you introduced to her? Was this an arranged marriage, or did you?
Okay, they're all-time marriage. We never met. My father and mother and her parents met. Somebody was introducing us. And then I saw her, just saw her for 10 to 15 minutes. And they wouldn't ask my opinion anyway. They would ask. My father was not such a crazy. He was very, very smart businessman. He knew what to do. But anyway, this was the way. I myself would be ashamed to tell my father I would like to go out with her and to see her a couple more times. I saw her 10, 15 minutes, and my mother was a smart mother, and she knew what the girl is, and she spoke to her. I had my sister in New York, she's older than I am, and she saw her. So I left to them that they should decide. I just looked at her, and we spoke to 10, 15 minutes, and we were engaged. That's all it was. It it's not like today.
Right.
Today sometimes they are only 100 people, yes, and then they are on the bus right away.
How old were you?
I was 22 years old.
And what was your wife's name?
Pearl.
Pearl, her main name?
Her name, Elba.
Elba.
Yeah.
And she was from?
She was from Poland, also. She was called Australia.
So then you got married very shortly after that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we got married and we lived in until I was ordained. I was ordained as a resident after my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then Poland was the business was very bad. And I got a beautiful position from Paris. I had friends there. I went to Paris. It was 2 years after my wedding.
Mm-hmm. This was about in...
This was in 1931.
Mm-hmm.
When you were living still in Poland, those 2 years, were you living with family? Or on your own? Did you have your own apartment?
My own apartment.
Okay.
My father-in-law was my father. My father was not taking the offer all the time, but my father-in-law was a very good man. And there was a time that they paid the... they paid for all expenses. You could sit and study. My father would pay it like the day we have to pay off.
Okay, so in 1931, then
I came to
you and your wife came to Paris to accept a rabbinic position.
Yes, as a rabbinic. It's not Hitler, I would never come to you. It would never be one of the best positions.
Oh, where was this?
In Paris.
Oh. What was the name of the congregation?
Beth Israel.
Beth Israel.
Yes.
Could you tell us about that period of time in your life?
I was very happy there. I was respected everything. At the same time, I went to school It was very nice. I don't know what to tell you, but I made a beautiful living, a nice living. And we lived a very nice life until Hitler came. When Hitler came, I left Paris 3 weeks before Hitler took Paris. And as I was a few small children, my youngest son was born in Paris. He was 9 months old when we left Paris.
Could you tell us, first of all, about your children and their names when they were born?
Yeah, my older son was born in 1928 in Poland, in Łódź. I lived in Łódź.
My mother's from Łódź.
Yeah, my mother's from Łódź. So, kind of seems just 40 miles from Łódź, so you know.
What is his name?
My older son's name is Shmuel Samuel. And then I had a daughter also in Lord, she was born in Lord. And she is also here, she lives in the room. And she has already, my daughter has already, she married to the children. And her, she has two sons, my daughter, they both are playing for our house.
Your grandson?
My grandson. But there are things from Charlie the Bath. You see the Charlie the Bath. But they both not practice in Grabba. My older grandson, my daughter's son, he is married. He is a year ago. And he works for the government. He makes a lot of money. He works for Social Security. He's a mathematician, and they already gave him, he worked there 3 years, and he was still a single, and they gave him already 3 raises. He makes a lot of money. He is very good. So he is ordained, but he's in other classes. And my younger son is still, my younger grandson, also my daughter's son, he is still studying. He is very good. You know, there is a name caller, you heard something about it. they're paying for it. If you sit and study, they give you $100 a week. I got the deal with the week.
We just got one in Pittsburgh this past year. When you were still in Paris, and Hitler was coming to power in Germany, you were close enough to know what was going on, really. As a rabbinical leader, were you telling your congregation certain things? How did you react to all that?
I knew. I had that. My whole family was in Paris, was in Europe. My uncle was in, my brother with 5 children, my father and mother, my wife's parents, were all in the Hitler camp. And I knew approximately we had letters before from Poland to France. They went around Germany. They had the different kind of ways to get there. And I knew knew a lot of them. We didn't know so much of these people. And sure, not just me, everybody in Paris knew that. And we were still afraid that Hitler would take Paris also, would take Paris. But we thought it would take years, and it did not take years. We went around to Belgium, to Holland, and we took Paris in just 3 weeks. I escaped this because my sister, my father, my brother-in-law, Rabbi Lipkin, sent this special paper to come to the United States. You had to be there for a quarter and all this. You couldn't come to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But he sent me papers from a synagogue, Musafari synagogue in Brooklyn. It was a big place. They sent me paper, a contract that I should become a rabbi. And there I was a rabbi for years.
Could you spell that for me, please?
Musafari is M-U-S. A-C-H-R-E-A-R-Y.
When you were still in Europe, were you able to try to tell any of your relatives to leave where they were, to tell your parents? It was already too late.
Paris was, France was then the country still open before Hitler came.
Right, but they wouldn't even try to come to Paris where you
were? Everything was locked up. And yes, it was impossible. You couldn't save nothing. Because everything was lost.
So you lost your whole family?
I lost a lot. I had at least 48 cousins and uncles. But my own father, mother, brother,
you never heard anything once you left Paris?
No, there was never.
By 1939?
1940. I left 1940.
And you think they were gone all by then?
Yeah, we still had from my mother. We had, my father was dead. My father died. Because not so much in the gas chamber, but it was the sicknesses, and they had nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And he died because of hunger. I had still a letter from my mother, but my mother died a few weeks later.
Oh, from natural causes, do you think?
No, nobody. Just my brother was in a gas chamber. My brother was his wife, so I know somebody that was in the same place. So I had they took him to the gas chamber. But my father, mother, my wife's parents died from hunger, not because of sickness.
Right. And my grandmother died also.
Yeah. Before the war, I personally had a very nice life. And we made a nice living. Everything was fine. As I told you before, I will never leave Paris. Not Hitler. The Jewish life, anti-Semitism, was in Paris then, very, very little. I mean, they were talking about before the war. There was no problem about Jews. There was problem about étrangers, and strangers. The French people didn't like French people, strangers. I mean, they liked their own. But it was not the question about Jewish or something like that. I just want to explain it. It was really not too much anti-Semitism. We can consider the United States is more anti-Semitism today.
Really?
It was in my time. I'm talking about my time. Later on, it was horrible. It was, because they learned from the Israelis. But in my time, when I came in 1931, it was a pleasure, but no, they didn't know what a Jew is or a Polak. They knew what a stranger, a stranger called a stranger.
Do you know how big the Jewish community was in Paris?
When I came to, we considered them quite hard.
And were most of them Orthodox Jews, keeping kosher and keeping the laws, would you say?
No. Orthodox Jews, you can have the most was 500.
They were more liberal Jews then?
Yeah. Maybe I'm mistaken. It was French people themselves. We are talking about immigrants. Paris had a lot of immigrants from Europe. But French people, well, maybe another 200-300. But born French, really French, they were Orthodox. They were very, very religious.
Was your congregation mostly made up of French people?
No.
Of immigrants to France?
Yes. Yeah. They were wealthy people. My congregation was 50% diamond dealer in Paris. It was in not far from the business section, from the diamonds to Paris. I call the diamond center.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 50% of diamond dealers, and the other 50% were foreigners. There were the four businesses very great in Paris. You know, and they were business people, most of the businesses. They were very friendly people. In Europe, the friendliness was a little different than here. Here is, I'm not so much in the United States, I was in the United States. I know that you used to say, when a Jew comes from Europe, you can close it.
That's okay, we want everything that you might want to say.
When a Jew comes from Europe, the first couple of years, he's an Orthodox. And he makes the first 10,000 dollars to do it. I'm not even right here. Make 10,000, he becomes a conservative. And he can make 100,000, he becomes a report. And when he makes $1 million, he becomes a nothing. That's what Rada said, he was so that was the same thing was in Europe, was a little more friendly, more. But that's, I'm not telling you the United States is not the country, and I told you this joke about myself. When I came, you know, I'm European, the first thing they asked me how you like the United States. So the first time when they asked me how you like it, I lived in New York, how you like in New York, and my answer was, I don't know to tell you because they always did. In New York they made subways, it's not finished now. So I will tell you when it will be finished. Still not finished here. So, but later on, the first 2 years, European people take some time until they get used to it. But after you make a living, and now you started to make a nice living, I like the United States and I still like it.
So when you arrived, you went straight to Brooklyn to your brother-in-law?
So I got my position right away. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Was
it a big adjustment coming to a new country with
3 years? Yeah, it was an adjustment. I didn't know English, not one word, and I still don't know English.
You do fine.
But I came, it was, you know, on the ship, I think so I learned I had a book to learn a few words when you come in. So I knew already to say thank you, to say a few words. I knew that's all I learned. So I can one story that I have to tell you. It will be interesting. When we came, you know, I paid $10,000. Dollars was not French money. They had to go on the black market and carry and buy dollars. To be able to go in and wish to come take my three children and my wife, to be able to get a ride to the United States. Just $10,000 in black market. I mean, you couldn't. And that was a ship that the capacity was 500 people more. We were about 5,000 people. Dressed in like the heaven. And for this you had to pay. I had the other things I went through. I had to pay to get out. I was already in the French army. I wasn't in the army, but I was engaged. So you had to go because it was war. So you had to pay under the table. I gave it a $1,000.
That was from your family, still the money that you had earned that or was that money that you had earned already as a rabbi?
I saved $10,000.
$10,000 is still a lot of money.
A lot of
money. $100,000.
Sure. Sure, tremendous.
No, I made them out.
So you came here and you had a pulpit right away. Okay, was America what you thought it would be before you came here?
It was America. Let me explain to you first. What do you mean what I thought?
What did you think it would be like before you came?
In Europe you think much more about it. You think that you go out in the street in Brooklyn and the money is gold. The stain of it, he said the stones are gold. In Europe, you imagine, when you come here, you get used to it, so you can see it's not, the difference is not so much. But really, I thought a little different, but when you come here, you can see it. It's also the same people, the same good people. You have in Europe the same people, good people.
How did the people respond to what you were telling them in New York about what was happening in Europe?
You mean the congregation?
Mm-hmm.
The congregation responded. Mm-hmm. But they knew. Even adorn them in mind for the
Yeah.
I was born in 39.
You were born in 39. You were a baby. So people knew. They knew in the United States more than we knew in Paris later on. Later on, Paris was locked up. So you couldn't hear anything anymore. But in the beginning, years before, we knew more than later. Later on, I came to the United States. I knew more than going down to Europe than I knew in Paris. And, it was people knew and people responded. And the United States is the only country in the world that really helped save Jewish brothers in the whole world. The United States gave the money. You criticize sometimes people don't like to give money, but they're giving them more than the whole world.
Do you mean the Jews in the United States?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, those are more money here than the whole world.
In retrospect, do you think there was more that we could have done to save more people?
Okay, there are different kind of rumors we could make this. But later on, people could say the Jews. The Jews were not saved. More time loving people. About more than the rabbis in the meeting. It's not the present time. We just think we could do that. Now we think we did. But I don't think so. children need poetry. We all make mistakes.
Do you think if we had been more vocal, even, or tried to get our governments and our leaders to be more?
Our government made mistakes. But I'm not interested. I mean, I hear about Jews. They could do more. There is else to do more.
Go over the education, just get it done. When you came over, you had already gotten your master's from the Sorbonne.
No.
You had?
No, when I got into the Sorbonne, I just got languages.
You said in Southern Illinois you wound up getting your master's.
Southern Illinois.
How did you get from Brooklyn to Southern Illinois?
Okay, this is a long story. Move this way.
The next time we'll pick up with that? Okay. All right.
I left my pulpit because the neighborhood became black. I worked there for years in the neighborhood.
How many years were you in New York?
22 years.
Oh, in the same pulpit that you came originally?
Yeah, the same pulpit.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe the next time then that's where we'll start
with
your life.
During those 22 years, just to try to conclude, could you tell us a little bit about those 22 years? You said you were basically satisfied with that pulpit, or?
Yeah, I was satisfied, but I was not satisfied in ways that people did not. I told you before, 100% after that. And I wanted.
This is an Orthodox congregation, of course.
Yeah, 100%.
Was it Lubavitch?
No, it was not Lubavitch. The name is Mr. Harim means Lubavitch, but it was not. It was people from the whole neighborhood. In our way of teaching, a rabbi has to help people to be more religious than they are. This is all, this means a rabbi is a teacher. And if they're not listening to you, they're going to be accomplished. Just a rabbi to make a living, to get the check every month or every to live. It's an easy job, but if you want to be a rabbi. I didn't like it. I can tell you, the next time I will tell you, I even grabbed the rabbinical position to go in business. I thought I was a student in business, and I lost my few dollars in business. So I had to go back to. Because I never enjoyed it. I never know.
Did you write? Were you writing? Were you writing during this time? Mm-hmm. Were you involved at all in your own personal studying and writing while you were also a rabbi during the 22 years?
Yeah, I did a lot.
Is that what you enjoy doing more? The writing?
The writing and the
studying.
Yes. I enjoyed much. This rabbinical, I never enjoyed. You look at me as funny. I'm funny a little bit. Huh?
Not at all.
I think it's very understandable.
Okay, but I'm exceptional. I went in business and lost my money because I didn't know what business means. There are people that are looking for green thumbs like I am, so it took away my money and I go for it.
How about your wife and your children? Were they happy in New York?
Yes.
And did your children go to religious-based schools? They went to yeshivas?
My children, I told you, I have two sons. They're ordained. Mm-hmm. They went to Tara Vidal. They went to yeshiva. My daughter, my son-in-law, he's in business, he's in car business, but still he's also a developer.
Did your daughter go to school? You said your daughter is?
My daughter went to college. She has a 3-year college. She went to college.
Mm-hmm. And her
it was not easy. I let my daughter go to college. I was afraid she would tell him that she had. But anyway, she was very happy. Very fancy.
You didn't arrange her marriage?
No. Her husband is my cousin. He came from Europe also, and I, in fact, I took him brought him from Europe, from Italy. He got ran away from a camp from Hitler, and he was in Italy in a camp. So I brought him to the United States. And he was a young boy, he was coming up. And he married a Helen Morgan. So it's my cousin.
What about your son's marriages? Were they arranged, or?
No, my sons, my two sons met together. They're better than my mother. They were more modern than
that. But they're also Orthodox.
I have one son who's more Orthodox than me. He has a bird. He's a good boy, but he's still one.
Well, thank you.